Coming to you live from Adepticon, it's the podcast known as
Traps Under Blasted!
Woo!
No, you have to clap. You have to clap. You have to clap. You have to clap. Oh, man.
Yeah, as John said, this is the third time we get to do this at this show. And it's really just cool to be able to see, like, the same faces multiple times in a row. Like, I question your judgment, but, like, I appreciate that you're here.
Right.
Yeah.
Because usually it's just us and then the camera and then we and have like a laugh track.
And some white walls. Yeah. It's very sad, actually. Yeah.
It is a lot like the Big Bang Theory, really. Yeah. When nobody actually laughs. Ouch.
Yeah.
Rough room.
Yeah.
Scott, this is the first full day of Adepticon 2024. We got here yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, about 2:30.
We did not go to Dairy Island.
We did not. No, we skipped this time.
Yeah. So if you don't know what Dairy Island is, it is a murder hole / restaurant in rural Wisconsin on the way.
Yeah.
We went to a Hardee's / gas station / you can take a shower.
Yeah. It was an experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was no Dairy Island.
No.
But no, it was okay. It was fine.
No one watched me pee this time.
thankfully.
Yeah, but so far, do you have anything that's like stands out to you as like memorable or something you really enjoyed in the first day plus?
Are you fishing for a certain answer?
Absolutely,
right now, John?
I am.
Did you guys go to the Warhammer reveal event at all?
Yeah.
Okay, can we get like, let's throw some hands here. Who went? I'm just curious.
Just a percentage.
Okay,
roughly.
So like 60%, a decent amount.
Okay. Almost, so we should share a little bit for those that didn't go why it was the worst experience a human can endure.
So we get up and like we're all sitting there. It's actually, there was a shocking number of people in the room. Like it was totally full. People were standing on the outside. And Brant gets up, starts talking about what we're going to see. And basically, he describes like an hour and 15-minute long movie that we're going to watch. Like, totally just not even considering the fact this is like a live format. Like, we're going to want to like interact with it. Yeah. He's like, all right, let it play. And we're all just like, wait, what? Actually? Really? And then it happened.
Like, movie in the loosest sense of the word.
Yeah. A lot of fat in that movie.
Yeah. A lot of 15 seconds of really can't really see the model screens flying by. And then 15 minutes of two dudes talking about the lore of the fucking game.
Yeah. Just show the models.
Just show
the models. Yeah.
That's all we care about.
Just like a nice white background so I can see what's going on, actually.
So sweaty. Was anyone else super sweaty by the end of that last night? Oh, my God. Yeah. So it's like you kick off, like the funk from the nerds, like it goes up a level every day of Adepticon. So they're like, let's just crank it up to 11 from day one.
Yeah. Get it started hot early.
Get it started hot. But they did announce Age of Sigmar 4th edition.
They did, yeah.
But didn't actually show any models.
Yeah. So, admittedly, a cool cinematic, but not a single model.
That was a movie and the right movie length.
Yeah, it was good. It got me hyped, you know?
Yeah.
And you're looking forward to the Clan Esh and Skaven?
Yeah. I am all in for rats.
Ninja rats, no less.
Yeah, ninja rats. It's the moment I've been waiting for my whole life. And Danimals has been helping me collect some old school metal rats.
Okay. Are you finding an appreciation for old school models?
No, I'm just a collector of things.
Okay.
And so I got to catch them all. So I have to own the old ones.
Okay. Actually, you know what? I'm curious, actually. How many of you genuinely appreciate the old models in the old world Kickstarter set? Like, how many of you actually liked them?
Show of hands.
Like, no shame at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how many of you were like kind of upset that they didn't get like new and fresh stuff? Okay.
Yeah, that's about a third.
Okay. I was just kind of curious because you kind of hear both sides of the story as like a content creator. You hear like all the opinions. I was kind of curious where it broke down, you know? Appreciate that.
So what we see is 75% of people just don't give a shit either way. So that's it.
Why do all the games I like suck, dude?
So did you play any games yet today?
I did, yeah. So I got to demo Star Wars Legion for the first time. Which was super cool because like I'm like into Star Wars right now and I haven't played that game. It's been out for a long time. That was a lot of fun. It was like a super scripted demo, which is really good because you got to like experience all the important mechanics that they want you to experience in, you know, in that 1 hour little session. So that was cool. I got to play Nightthirst by Whittle Goblin at the Blackside Studios. That was a lot of fun. That was like a super characterful game. It reminded me a lot of Necromunda because like every single like character has like its own chart and different things happen to them when you roll on a d20. So it's like super swingy, but a lot of fun. And they got to play Siren's Watch, Jamie Dagger's games as well, also in that same little area. So yeah, I got three done so far today.
Yeah, I heard nothing but good things about both of those games.
Yeah, yeah, there's things I like about both of them, so it's good.
I didn't play anything, but I bought more Relic Blade models. I'm proud of myself. I feel accomplished.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah,
do
you? I do.
How many have you painted?
I did a video and I painted two of them, so I painted
it counts.
I painted three.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
But I have like five more primed in on the little hobby holder, so that's almost
painted. I feel like Joshy over there is a little bit salty about the amount of those models you painted, because you like baited him into playing the game. And I think Evan is somewhere in the back here, and I kind of baited him into playing MCP. I was like, hey Evan, we can play this game if you paint some stuff. He's like, all right. And he actually did it, and I was like, oh shit.
Actually, Evan.
Sorry, bro.
Evan isn't actually here. That's Vince.
Oh, yeah, actually.
Sorry, I'm Primaris Vince.
Well, we can't be funnier than that.
Your life's all downhill from here, Evan.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Well, the only thing that I really did today, I don't really even know. Like, I went through the hobby hall, like, right when it opened, and I think that's the first year that I've ever done that, because usually Thursday I have to sleep until noon. But I didn't do that this year. It is so freaking busy. Does anyone that's been here more than 1 year, does it feel like it's more and more people since COVID? Like, we're bursting at the seams here?
It's Thursday, dude, and it's this busy.
I'm a little bit scared.
Yeah.
But maybe we're going to get a bigger place.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
I don't know. I would be nice.
Yeah.
Or they just, like, you know, only a certain number of people can come, and I don't want to do that. Like, they did that for Gen Con.
Yeah. Or, like, I don't like how they, like, have all the games out in, like, different hotels, and it kind of feels like everyone's kind of, like, splintered off, and, like, I want it all to be under, like, one roof so I can, like, go around and see all the cool games and check everything out and see all the different models and like terrain sets they play on. Like, I love doing that. It's like part of the con going experience for me, just kind of like vicariously watching people play war games, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's sad when the only ones you can watch are, like, you know, the ones you see all the time, the GW ones, or maybe like the Atomic Mass games and stuff like that. Like, I want to see the weird small ones, you know?
Are you saying you want to see like historicals?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I mean, okay.
I'm down for it all. I mean, I'm not going to like buy it and paint it necessarily, but yeah, I want to see it for sure.
I'm not here to judge you, but...
but you
they are.
Shit.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about when we get to the real important stuff here?
I mean, like, I can chat for days about... No, I can't. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So we're going to have the microphone. For those of you that are watching or listening at home, we've got a microphone offset, so you actually don't see these people. They're all paid actors. There's not actually an audience here. And they're going to come up with their questions. So while we take a minute for folks who want to stand up and kind of make your way to the mic. I did ask a question out to the Facebook group, Trapped Under Plastic Facebook group, this same question, any question you could ask us. And Sexy Teeth Joshy brought a couple to the top. And the first one is, if John and Scott were in a pit and someone was tossed a sword between the two of you, who would win? So this is like the Joker question, right? Where he snaps the pool cue.
Which one of us could kill a man? You know, that's the question you got to ask. I feel like Daryl could kill a man.
Yeah. You can't put Daryl in this equation.
Oh, okay. You couldn't just don the alter ego and just
No.
Okay.
Or Kanjan either. Okay. Neither of those is the fair fight. But like, we both have this moment of like, oh no, we have to do this.
Yeah.
And then you'd grab the sword. And I kick sand in your eyes.
Okay.
I got the first two moves figured out. From there.
This is like our Guild Ball game. You're the first two moves figured out. And then by the end, I killed you.
Then you just wing it. Maybe that is the answer. That is the answer. Yeah, that's also how I approach mini painting. The first two moves.
Yeah, you got
to. I have a plan going in.
After that, you just riff it.
I was like, oh, this looks like shit. Just keep going. All right, no, there's no one in line, so this is going to get real awkward.
No, there's another great question that actually they had, which was what was a technique that you learned that you felt maybe kind of like held you back early on, you know? Or maybe like the way you interpreted it kind of held you back. Can you think of anything?
I feel like you asked the question because you thought it was a good one, so I'll let you answer first.
You know, I actually had thought of an answer, and then I had forgot, and so I handed it off to you while I was asking the question. You know?
A question.
Let's go here first, because I can't think of my answer to that question.
Yeah, bad question. Bad question.
Yeah, just pick it up. Pick it up.
Use it like a microphone. Yep.
Yeah.
Am I... This is Hud the Hobby Daddy here.
What up, Hud?
Are you too familiar with the work of one Bobby Fingers?
Yes, I am. Yes.
No. So for John, Bobby Fingers is a YouTube channel. I believe he's Irish, and he makes dioramas of celebrities and embarrassing moments, like one where Steven Seagal was choked out and shit his pants, and Mel Gibson getting drunk and getting a DUI.
Yeah.
So if Bobby Fingers were to make a diorama of the two of you individually, what would the scenario be?
So basically what you're asking for is for us to reveal an incredibly embarrassing moment in front of like 200 people?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, that's good. Let's do it for each other.
No. Yeah. Fucking terrible.
All right. I got it.
Oh, you know it right away.
Yeah. There's so many. No, I think one that maybe I've told before, but is a little bit older and definitely funny, was we filmed Drunk Mini Painting.
Oh, great. We're going to go there.
Which, by the way, I've thrown up after every single one. Every single one I've puked. But the very first one that I did with John, like immediately after, we were like so hungry. And so we ate like an entire bag of Doritos, like between both of us. And then, like, we were, like, writhing around under the table that we were painting at. And then he eventually just, like, grabbed, like, the curtain of my sound blankets and it just puked all over it. So that moment where he's, like, lying on the ground and he's like, God save me! And it's, like, orange everywhere on a white sound blanket. Stained permanently.
Still orange.
Still orange.
Yeah.
Genuinely. Yeah, that was amazing.
So there was this one time that we were recording Drunk Mini Painting. and Scott was really excited to play Song of Ice and Fire with Dan right after.
Yeah, I was like...
And Dan was there getting the mat set out, getting like the models out. And we look over and Scott is still sitting behind the desk where we recorded. And he is white as his shirt is right now.
Yeah.
And I think he was asleep or dead, just sitting here. And you're like, I don't feel so good.
I could not move. I was like conserving all energy just to not puke. I was like, holy shit.
Like you were talking, but you couldn't move your jaw because that would keep you from vomiting.
Yeah.
And eventually you had to try to get the trash can that is like wedged in your desk, so it's like conveniently in your desk so you can sweep all your hobby stuff into the trash can, but you had to like push it up from the bottom to pull it out while you were trying to puke.
Yeah. And easy to sweep into, not easy to puke into.
Yeah.
I did not think about that design flaw. Yeah.
And Dan and I just stared.
Do we do anything?
And then at one point we're just like, I don't think you're going to play Song of Ice and Fire tonight.
I really wanted to, though.
Yeah. So that's it. So out of clay.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate the question.
Good question.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Peter Liggett.
Hey.
And I have a question for John.
Oh, boy.
John, last year you made me a promise.
Oh,
I gave
shit.
You some.
Oh, shit.
I gave you some treats that you were supposed to share with Scott on... A Trapped Under Plastic episode, and I heard that on a rage of fireball, you misplaced the package.
Did I really? This is the first I've heard of this.
It's been a year-long vendetta for me, sir. And I would like to give you the chance to make it right.
Okay.
I have here some Canadian maple cookies.
Oh,
hard and soft.
Oh,
would you be willing
the ultimate
to eat
cookie
them, here with Scott to make up for your transgressions?
What do I have to do? Do I have to like mama bird him or something?
No. Just share some cookies.
Okay.
All right.
He has to eat them in front of me, and I can't eat them.
Oh no, you both can
need them.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Scott, here's a medal for never letting me down like your partner did.
Whoa! Yes! You might get a golden demon, but I didn't let Painterly get down.
Okay. Awesome. That was hilarious.
Wow.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Steph.
I don't get what was the question?
Falling freely. This is for John. When's the first stream?
It's happening again.
I prepared for this moment. And the plan was that I was going to stream at least once before the next Tup Live. So I am going to take a 1 year extension on that. So I will stream before next year's Tup Live. Luckily, I've Vince Prime to help me. He told me he'd help me. And because he didn't help me, I didn't stream this year.
Oh, yeah, it's my fault. For sure.
Oh, now I feel like such a terrible person.
I honestly hope every single question is just for you. That would be so great.
When's the stream, John?
So, first of all, my name's Colin.
Hi, Colin.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you to the whole podcast, both you guys and everyone involved behind the scenes.
James Rutter Goblin. Shout out to James. Yeah.
And to all my fellow patrons on Patreon.
Hell yes. Hell yes.
Thank you so much.
Who support the podcast. But I just want to first say thanks, because I, like many other people, go through a lot of ebbs and flows in my hobby journey. You know, hobby a lot, take some time off, hobby back. And usually whenever I'm in one of those off times and I put the podcast on, inevitably I get back into it.
So you guys, just
your positivity and encouragement, and always encouraging people to get back out there, it really helps me, and I'm sure it helps lots of people in this room who
heck yeah so. Appreciate it, thank you.
Now to the question.
Oh, okay, you buttered us up.
That was now this question isn't meant as an attack, but it's something I've been curious about, because I've actually heard other content creators mention in their content that they are or feel out of touch sort of with the average hobbyist just by doing just because they are, you know, full-time content creators. Or is that something that you guys ever feel or think about, both as content creators and as display painters? Like, you know, John, you just did a huge binge bender of like 10 hour a day for, you know, over a week, and that's not something a normal person, normal hobbyist does. So.
I know, you look at the rest of that Golden Demon case. I mean, I'm not the only one. okay.
Yeah.
What a good freaking question.
I have an answer immediately. So is Eon's Battle, like, is Jay and Nick here? No?
No, they're not your friends.
Yeah, fuck. we were actually chatting earlier, and he said something to me that was really interesting. He talked about how he doesn't like to try super hard on painting because, one, it makes it difficult to explain exactly what's going on because it becomes more nuanced and weird, but also it becomes more unrelatable. And to Jay, it's important to create a product, like a video, that would actually encourage someone to strive for the end result than, like, look at it and say, oh, that's cool. Anyways, like, I'm just going to, like, move on now, watch another video. Or, like, or, you know, not paint at all, like, in a worst-case scenario. Whereas in, like, in my head, when I make a video, it's like almost entirely self-serving. Like I make a video about a thing that I'm really interested in and I'm excited to make a video about, and I shoot all the footage that I want to shoot because I have fun doing it. And that was just really interesting to compare that. And so that kind of gave me that thought you just mentioned, like, in a moment, like, oh, you know what? Is what I'm making, like, nowadays in the last year, like, less educational and more just, like, you know, straight up entertainment, because I've, like, kind of fallen out of touch in that way. I just had that thought, like, today. So that's kind of where I'm at and thinking about it.
Yeah, I never thought about it till right now, Colin. but it's honestly a good question. I think that I'm so often in my own head trying to come up with a way that makes it feel doable, even if it is more complex. Because just trying it, you'll realize that you can do that, and it's not as unachievable as if you just didn't know where to start. But I haven't sat down and thought about, like, really somebody brand new coming to my channel and they just don't know where to begin. I've always thought of myself as kind of the new guy in mini painting, and I haven't been around long enough to where it's like, oh, I've grown that much, but maybe I'm not there anymore. Maybe I have not kind of jumped back. I think one of the biggest things for me is why I really like coming here every year and like going to Nova last year and LVO and those things is all the things that are going on here are really cool, but the biggest thing for me is the recharging the batteries from talking to all of you, because we're sitting in our basement or your studio with a camera and nobody else, and it's hard to remember. So I need this and to see somebody excited about where they're at, or they were just new in the hobby, or a big step that they took, it kind of brings me back to what are the kinds of things that are the most helpful. So
awesome.
Yeah. Well, good question. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for your answers. And I said, was an attack.
Not at all. Yeah.
Thanks, Colin.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
My name's Eric.
Hey, Eric.
Nice to meet you.
So
when I got in the hobby like 25 fucking years ago, I feel like the hobby was very much presented as a games first, painting second kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of developed over the years as social media has become bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And we see the face of the painting side of the hobby a lot more. Mm-hmm. For me, I spent those 25 years very much from that direction of this is a game, mm-hmm. and the painting is to supplement that. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened and we all know that shit. Spend our time at home, mm-hmm. whatever. And I watch you guys a lot. And I consider you guys my inspiration for approaching the hobby from an artistic perspective, mm-hmm. and realizing that it can be that more solo kind of thing, mm-hmm. where you can do the hobby for yourself. And it doesn't have to be for a game to interact with other people. Mm-hmm. You can enjoy it on your own. So I attribute you guys as my inspiration for coming from the hobby in that direction.
Awesome.
For you guys, what do you consider your inspiration creatively towards the hobby?
I can go first.
Okay.
And this is actually related to something that we just talked about recently. And actually, it might be on a podcast that's coming out in the future, but we'll say it now because it is. So since I was a little kid, whatever the thing I was interested in. So when I was little, the very first toys that I got interested in was He-Man, Masters of the Universe. And so I went from He-Man and Transformers and G.I. Joes and Ninja Turtles to getting into like movies and reading Dragonlance books and all that kind of stuff. My relation to that was always some form of art. So at school then, I would draw the comic book characters. I would draw Ninja Turtles. I would like figure out how to make my own vision of this creatively. And so after playing D&D for over 20 years, realizing that this was the way I could take my big hobby that I was really passionate about for a long time and bring the art into it, it was just like it unlocked the doors of what I had known as a kid and didn't realize and I was separated from for like a decade since I quit architecture school. So
you're saying this is all internal and you're the source of your own inspiration?
Well,
no, I'm just fucking joking. but let's be real. I had the same kind of experience growing up too, right? Yeah. And like I went through primary school loving the Ninja Turtles, loving the mm-hmm. you know, whatever kind of thing as a kid, right? And you take your art classes. I mean, I'm from Canada, maybe it's different here. Who knows?
No.
Maybe not. But I did all that shit through school. Taking the inspirations I had growing up as a kid, mm-hmm. and using it as fuel for the way I express myself mm-hmm. in school, in the school mm-hmm. system, right? And that kind of got shot down a lot mm-hmm. because it's not quite accepted to lean into maybe pop culture and stuff and use that as inspiration for your own artwork, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this like stigma that it's not okay to extrapolate on those kinds of things in an artistic way. Mm-hmm. So I always found that it was kind of detrimental to my creativity. to use that as inspiration. So, I mean, for me at least, and it is inspiring to me, but the way it's perceived by other people, maybe within the education system.
Sure.
That was maybe, you know, a negative impact on my creative journey, maybe. Uh-huh. Did you find that as well, or?
I think back then it wasn't something that I shared with others. It was just more of my time as a kid alone. And we lived out in the country. I didn't have a lot of friends to play with. So it was like how I could tell my stories in my head and visualize them and to create that. So it was like my way of connecting the thing I cared about to bringing it, making it my own. But I did have that as well in high school. It's like when you put yourself out there, especially kids are nasty in school. And if you don't have administration that supports how you want to express yourself, it can be rough. So yeah, I feel you there.
Yeah, that's cool. What about you, Scott?
I don't know. I like to figure things out for myself in a big way. And so something that is really fun for me is like early on, it was like how to paint a display model like super well. And I would like voraciously read blogs and like watch like Painting Buddha and try to figure out all the things and try things out. And like the more you keep doing that in like a specific topic, like the more nuanced and like small the shifts become in education. And so it's fun to like just do kind of like a metric shift every now and then and just look at like a whole different category, like airbrushing. Like that's like a whole different thing to learn, right? Mm. Or like in my case right now, it's like painting for wargaming, like for gaming, like you mentioned at the beginning of your question. And like I'm discovering for myself that it's like a whole different thing to like display painting, and that like I am like, well, was for a long time, like truly bad at it. Like I would spend so much unnecessary time and like not finish my stuff and never have a completed army. So like for me, it's like getting into a topic and really figuring out the nuts and bolts and figuring out like how I like to approach it and stuff like that. And yeah, that kind of stuff.
So you would say like your inspiration to become creatively like better as a painter comes from your internal maybe perspective of like where you're at and where you could be, kind of thing.
Yeah, because like
so you don't attribute to anyone in particular, kind of thing.
Like, oh, I mean, there's definitely inspiration from like all sorts of things, but that's definitely a big one. Yeah. And you could be the kind of person who like really goes gung ho down like one aisle, you know, and is like a master. But I don't know. I do like to dabble in a bunch of different things and like, you know, have something to say when someone asks a question about any kind of topic and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I mean, I also get inspiration from stuff like what he's saying. Like right now, I just saw Dune Part 2, and I loved that movie. And so I'm like, how do I play in a Dune RPG? How do I paint a Dune miniature? Like, how do I play, you know, Dune Imperium more, the board game? So like, I like to saturate myself in a thing like that when it's like really cool and inspiring. But he saw that answer, so I had to have a different one.
Fuck yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Let's try to shorten the mic time to just a solitary question, if possible. And then I want to hear all the stories like after the fact, after the show.
Well, dang, he took my question.
Oh, no.
my name's Chris. Hey, Chris. What I was going to ask is, when you start off, like, I painted my miniature to play my game, right? To where you guys are today, my question was, you know, what is your personal story that pushed you from, I got to paint my guy to play my game, to learning wet blending and color theory, and you know why did you make that journey to where you are today? Mm-hmm. And if that's too similar to that question, my next question would be
no. That's good. That's a good question. Right. Yeah,
for me, it's pretty straightforward. I have a daughter. I got a bunch of animals. I got all these adulting things, and for me, I found it a lot more manageable to find an hour a night, or 30 minutes a night, or 2 hours once a week to do the hobby side was a lot more achievable for me than to block off 4 hours to get a game of AOS in. And at the end of the day, I was just like, I felt like I was always making progress if I put the art first. And I felt like the satisfaction for me of painting a unit of models felt better than even if I did awesome in a game and won the game, right, with the models. And so I was just like, I still appreciate that. And there's something about this art form that is freaking awesome, is that it actually has a tangible use in real life if I want to, but I don't have to. So I can use this in a game. And sometimes that is what pushes me to paint when I didn't really want to paint tonight, getting inspired by the game so I can ping pong it from the hobby to the art side. And I feel like, Scott, right now you've ping-ponged over really to the game side, mm-hmm. but that's also pushed the cool things you're painting, right?
Yeah, definitely. For me, I think, like, I don't listen to podcasts while I'm painting or really listen to music or have a movie on in the background.
But you should all listen to podcasts while you're painting.
Yes. Good catch. So, like, what I don't know, while I'm doing anything, I'm just, like, thinking about, like, what I'm doing, like, a lot. And so, like, while I'm painting, just naturally, I'll be like, I'll try a thing, and I'll be like, was that right? Did that work out for me? Did that do what I wanted to do? And maybe it didn't. Let me try a little bit different. And I'll just do that, like, a million times. And so, I don't know. That's kind of what pushed me in the very beginning. I can't, like, do a thing and, like, not think about it in, like, a really, like, I don't know, intense way. It's hard to shut my brain off in that way. And so that immediate improvement kind of came from that. So I tried new things. I was frustrated. I didn't understand what I was doing wrong. And so I do research out in the internet, you know, try some of those things. And then, like, okay, now I'm starting to figure things out. Things are starting to work for me, but it's taking time. So it's part of that process. It's just like, I like to think about what I'm doing a lot and try things. Like, I rarely, like, I just finished a Cawdor gang, and I used, like, 10 different paint ranges and was, like, always changing them and just trying new things out and seeing what's what. Because there's so much stuff to try out in the hobby, and people ask questions about all kinds of stuff, and I want to have, like, answers for it. And so yeah, it comes from a lot of that, a lot of experimentation.
Hmm. Yeah.
Good question.
One quick follow-up?
Sure.
Are you done?
Mike.
Like, when is enough?
You want to pick up the mic and answer again? Good question.
Sorry. So my follow-up question is, are you done? Like, when is enough? Have you learned enough? Are you still trying to get to a next level for yourself? Or are you happy that you can turn out the quality that you want and the time that you want and the, you know, et cetera? Yeah. Like, where's the line?
Sure.
Just curious, for you personally.
I think every painter in an ideal world is happy with the quality of their mini when they're done painting it, no matter if they're brand new or they've been doing this for 30 years.
Mm.
If you're not happy then, you're not going to have the stick-to-itiveness to be in this hobby long term. So always pushing yourself and not being happy with what the product looked like, you're just kind of, you know, cutting your nose to spite your face, right? Just embrace a bit of that. But if you have a little bit of that fire of, okay, I learned something here, I think if I do it again, I could do it better, or it's excited me to do better on the next one, that's it. And I don't think, that's the exciting thing about this hobby, is I don't think I will ever feel like I'm as good as I'm ever going to be, and I don't think I'm ever going to be excited about the exact same thing in a given year versus the next year or the previous year. So I could just go with the flow about what excites me, and I may not paint competitively for, like, 5 years and be happier than I've ever been in miniature painting. I don't know, but I know that that's a possibility. So that's what's so great about the hobby.
There's just so much to try out, you know? And, like, I think about, like, how long of a time I spent invested in, like, just getting good at painting kind of in a GW style with a paintbrush. That's one specific style with, like, a specific tool. And there's just, like, so many other approaches just with the paintbrush that I could, like, look into that I haven't gotten around to yet. And so it's hard to imagine, like, getting to the point where you feel like, yeah, I'm a master in all these things, you know, because there's just so much to try to absorb. Like, and at that point, like, you can start to get into, like, converting and even sculpting. And, like, yeah, there's too much to consume to ever stop. When I die, maybe.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your work.
Maybe.
I'll do it from the grave.
The Technomancer will bring you back.
Hi, guys. My name's John.
Hi.
Good name.
With an H or without an H?
So I get asked this every year by you guys, and I can hear the complete disappointment in John's voice when I say it's with an H.
Get out.
He kind of covered my question, but I'll ask you anyway. So, in terms of the past year, I know you both have had sort of very large projects that have been near and dear to you. John, with your Golden Demon piece. Mm-hmm. Scott, with the Elves Kickstarter. In terms of the past year, how have you guys sort of handled that idea of perfection, both in the way of always feeling like you can do more, which you kind of covered, but also when you do make a mistake, how do you resolve it? Like, you know, if you're laying down an airbrush coat and that little fucking speck comes off.
Yeah.
It's the most frustrating thing. What do you do when that happens? How do you handle the issue of it not being perfect?
I think while you're painting, like, you're constantly just analyzing the state of the model, like, at every moment. And so when you make a mistake, like you cause a spider web, like in that moment, you're like, okay, this is my current state and now I need to operate from here. And so it's like, what's the next solution? Okay, well, I'm going to move the airbrush to the side of the spider brush, just do air and push it all up into this recess where no one can see it, right? It's like, so you're kind of just like, you have to move on instantly. Like when I sprayed my models with white opaque 10 minute curing resin, my fate was sealed instantaneously. No amount of isopropyl alcohol or good intentions was going to get rid of that and change my life in that moment. So I just accepted my fate immediately. I think a certain bit of that is involved in, I mean, honestly, everyday life, but also with painting miniatures, like, because acrylic painting dries so fast, you got to get on it so fast. So yeah, that kind of thing.
I guess over this past year, especially, I have constantly been humbled by everything I've done in the piece. I felt like I could have done it better. But if you just realize that everything I do could be better, you'll actually never finish it. And by the time you get it all done, you'll surprise yourself. But the hardest part is sticking your head down and just keep painting, because when you have those frustrating moments, the easier thing to do is just put it down, walk away, go play a video game tonight. So before you know it, a week goes by and then you've lost the drive. So just like anything, it's like you, if you make it repetition, the good things will happen. So I look at like my piece this year in the Golden Demon case, and I know it's better than the one last year. So I'm proud of that, but I still see nothing but the bad stuff. But that, and I don't mean that like I hate it. I mean, that's like, when you get so close to it, it's so hard to see anything but the bad. But if you don't see that, you either, it's time to quit, or it's, you know, you need to be more thoughtful in looking at ways to improve, and you will improve. So
thank you guys very much.
Thank you, John, with an H.
Hey guys, how are you?
Well, how are you?
I got a pretty quick and easy one for Scott here. I know you just answered this probably two questions ago where you said you don't listen to music when you paint anymore. but as the kind of guy who's got the metal theme in his videos,
yeah.
What's the kind of metal music you're listening to recently, or any new bands that you want to let people know?
You know, so
about?
I listened to a lot of thrash metal when I was in high school. And so I'm trying to like look into like what modern day thrash metal sounds like right now. And so I've been listening to a lot of Havoc. You know Havoc at all?
Sure.
Yeah, so like, and I'm kind of loving it, honestly. It's like in a big way, it's actually better than 80s thrash metal. It's like tighter, it's meaner, it's faster. So yeah, a lot of that lately.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
like I said, nice and easy. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Hey guys. So a lot of times as painters, we have not just our favorite paint colors, but we'll find those few in our career that like, you just see it and it gives you like a certain vibe or a mood or an inspiration. Mm-hmm. So if you had a mood ring that was paint colors, what would like your two or three most common colors be on your mood ring?
I like how you made it a mood ring, but it isn't associated with our moods. Like I want, like if I'm angry, like I'm Bugman's Glow or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Do you want the association with a
that's up to
mood?
You.
Like, okay. Do you want it especially with like an actual paint in a bottle or like a color?
Like a paint color.
Okay. I think one of them for me has to be Necro Gold from Scale 75. That's like black, desaturated, ugly, gold, like kind of old gold. I think it's so good. I love to like wash that in green and have it look like kind of like, you know, like a wood elf armor or something like that. I love Necro Gold. It's going to be one of them.
Okay.
You go.
My first one has got to be Rhinox Hide. Okay. Everything about that color is so great because I could just feel it brings everything warm and together. And when you get that in the shadows, it just makes me feel like one glaze of that and I don't feel so shitty about what I just painted. That's pretty good.
I like Deep Blue a lot from Scale 75. That's like a great color just to shade like almost anything. It doesn't work for some stuff, but yeah, it's great to like not reach for black, but instead use Deep Blue.
Mm. I would say like a pure magenta. I think a pure magenta is such a vibrant, opaque, single pigment that it doesn't like give any ground to other colors to just scream. And so if I need a warm screaming color, it's like, you got to have that.
The last one, the most important one. And actually, you turned me on to this fairly recently.
Of course,
so
I did.
I love Hot Pink, right? Mm-hmm. And one that he recommended that I went out and bought was the Golden High Flow Airbrush Paint. And they have a hot pink, and it is 10 out of 10. So, yeah, that one. Yeah. So, what is that? That's gold, hot pink, and navy blue. Yeah.
That's a
great ring.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. That's a lot of color scheme right there.
Yeah. My last one, I will just say...
It cannot be one of your signature series with GoPro, because that's a cop-out. I'm out of your shit, Jack.
Way to call him out, dude.
I was just looking through my head through all of those. Yeah. I didn't make Rhinox hide in my set, so... okay, ice yellow. Ice yellow, if you want to highlight anything and not be boring with more white, add an off-white, and I find I use ice yellow in pretty much everything I paint. So it's like it's always on my desk. If you see any shots in my videos, that paint will always be there. So it's like it's a warm blanket for me to always go ice yellow.
Very nice.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. You're welcome. Only the good questions get applauses.
Rough.
Hello, I'm Scott.
Hey, nice.
My question was, with the prevalence, I guess with the success of the Kill Team in the most recent Warcry, do you think that has pushed more towards display painting because you're playing with less models on the table, so you're more likely to put more time into your models?
Oh, okay. So I've been thinking about this a lot lately, both with Warcry, all the Necromunda stuff, Scott's been jonesing about Jones. And then just dreaming that they will bring back Mordheim, is that it's not about the fact that I feel like I should put more time into it. It's just like I'm not overwhelmed at looking at how big the whole project is. So I feel like because the size is smaller, I'm not stressing about taking a little bit more time and making sure I like it. So it doesn't have to be perfect, but it just feels more doable. And so I'm more excited to start the project because I'm not seeing the mountain that I'm going to have to climb.
Yeah. I think the low model count definitely helps. But what also helps is that like every single character is like almost like a character. You know, like they have like extra details, they have cool poses and stuff like that. So that kind of makes you want to paint it better because it's not like one in 10 guys that kind of look the same. So yeah, I think it's those two things together. Yeah.
Good question.
That was a good one.
Is that a hard Mountain Dew, sir?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, brother.
All right. Purely hypothetical. I find you guys at some point this weekend cut off one of your fingers. Purely hypothetical. Okay. Which one are you most willing to lose and why?
Scott's finger. Oh, you're checking with the painting.
Yeah, because like I put like finger cots on specific fingers that like touch the model the most often, and I think it's these two and these two. So I would do maybe that one. No, seriously though, like I don't really use that one a lot while painting. So that's like an honest answer.
I say so. Scott, for the audio listener, Scott pointed to his right middle finger.
Yes.
I would say my left pinky. I think that's the easiest one to cut off cleanly.
You don't
cleanly.
Like stabilize on the model with the, like your hand with that pinky?
No, I'll just get that extra long stump right next to it.
Oh, you get the stump usage. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because
okay.
Then it's you get a lot, you're closer to your pivot point.
Is this clean off or is this the tip? Clean off.
Just the tip. Okay. We're good.
Okay. All right. Love the podcast and be seeing you.
Thanks. All right. Love the question. Yeah.
Also a hard Mountain Dew.
What the hell?
So I tried streaming last year on Twitch. I know streaming's not a great thing for...
It makes one of us. Yeah.
Yeah. I found that without any kind of like other social media presence or anything like that I just didn't have anyone watching. So it got kind of like, you know, down. Didn't feel like doing it after a while. Kind of quit, which was fine. I found out that there were a lot of bots. I thought there were people watching. No, it was bots. So I'm like, okay, cool. I don't care. Okay. But then I started like recently, about almost a year later, working on projects and getting on Instagram for it and posting more of my stuff. And then all of a sudden I get a 10K like view, and then a bunch of people start viewing. And I'm like, this feels really great. Like cloud nine. Mm-hmm. And I want to try to chase that high because I just want to show off my stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm tired of painting in a basement alone for just me because I want to paint stuff that looks cool. I want to get people to talk to me. I want to see what they're doing. I want to help them if I can. Mm-hmm. Where do I go from people watch, like, you know, 500 followers in the last couple months on Instagram? Like, what's the next step? Because I know y'all did, you know, start from the ground up. You know, is YouTube where it goes? Because Twitch kind of seems kind of eh.
My advice would be to the thing that excites you the most, because as in anything with social media, it's all about repetition and consistency. And so if the process of streaming or making a YouTube video is something you dread, then you're not going to stick with it. So I don't know if there's a particular answer, but I would maybe just try both and maybe make a YouTube video. Not because you need that YouTube video to do amazingly, but just so you experience the start to finish process and then analyze how you feel that process went. Because if that process isn't satisfying for you, it's not all of it's going to be fun, but if it's not satisfying for you to have completed the process, regardless of outcome, sooner or later, the rubber will meet the road and you'll probably stumble. So try those, maybe try them both out. And then it's just a matter of, just close your eyes to how many people are watching and just pretend that there's 1,000 watching, you know? And then if you do it like that, then they'll come if you're good.
If you do it, they will come. Yeah, I think this is maybe more specific of an answer than you're looking for, but I think there's an opportunity on Twitch to really stand out in a unique way when it comes to painting miniatures. I feel like for a long time, and maybe I'm wrong about this because I'm not like on Twitch's miniature painting section a lot, but I do dabble. But a lot of people are doing the same kind of thing, you know? They're painting a model, and I do this, and they're chatting with their chat. And I kind of use Twitch as like a means for people that watch my YouTube to like hang out live with me and paint minis. And so I'm not like really innovating at all. But like, what if you treated Twitch like a classroom? And like you made a semester's worth of content and like you were in like the NMM chapter and like the whole week was like you were going over things and you had like a little schedule that you could see on the Twitch channel and like you were live from a certain period and all the VODs were available and you had like a playlist of them on YouTube. Like you could, like there's opportunity everywhere in social media. Like we're all just waiting for the person to do the next right thing. And then we all just go fucking sprint at it. You know, it's like, oh, Fiverr is cool. Let's do Fiverr. Okay. Painting an army in 48 hours is cool. Let's all do that. And so, you know, you're not chasing the algorithm. The algorithm is chasing you. And I mean like the algorithm like of all social media platforms, like it's all the same thing kind of all the way down. So I think it's important to not just try to do what everyone else is doing like really well, but also to try to like mix it up and stand out a little bit in general, like on Instagram and Twitch.
Well, if that works out, I'll give you a credit. Yeah. I beat you to it because I think I got your own cogs going. But okay.
Yeah, so. Yeah, no, yeah, all you. I love to share ideas like that, so anyone can take that and run with it.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
Come to ask real questions here.
The real questions. Real questions.
All right, it's time for miniature painter celebrity deathmatch.
Oh, shit. Right.
I was afraid that you were going to touch on this when you talk about Daryl and the Sword, but thankfully
it didn't. Daryl and the Sword sounds like a sick 80s movie. Yeah.
You have to stay impartial.
Okay.
Who do you think would win in a fight? Sam Lenz.
Or
the strict technomancer that is Vince V.
Shit. You see this man with his shirt off, dude? This guy's a killer, dude.
Yeah. Vince has been killing people in his mind for 30 years. Yeah. Yeah. I think there would be some kind of like weird pro wrestling. They go at each other and then stop nose to nose in the middle of the ring and like hands clasp and they like turn to the screen and they're like, oh no, who is the real enemy now? It's like, I think that was what would happen because I don't want the other one to beat me up later.
I feel like Vince would convince Sam to not hurt him and then win that way. Because, like, whenever I talk to Vince, he always convinces me of something that I, like, didn't believe in prior. He, like, puts me under a spell or some shit. Like, I suddenly like Age of Sigmar now, you know? Like, how'd that happen?
For a year.
But, yeah. Mind control.
Thanks, guys.
Final answer.
Final answer.
Hi there. Hi. My name is Evan. I have a present. It is a bottle of liquor. It's maple whiskey, perhaps to go with your maple cookies.
Oh, hey.
So that's there. My question is, I'm the manager of my local game store. I run basically all of the events that we do there. So I'm doing a lot of different things, but we're starting to run a painting contest annually. We did one last year. Our second one's coming up in May. And we're mostly just looking to see what makes kind of competitive miniature painters or people who are just interested in it tick, and how to kind of appeal to those people, because we've mostly appealed to competitive wargamers, not competitive painters. So how do we get people who are interested in high-end painting or even just entering painting contests for the first time interested in doing that? Because it's not our typical wheelhouse.
First of all, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Because that is so freaking important.
Yeah, you're the real hero, actually.
Yeah. Yes. As Sexy Teeth Joshy can attest, the only reason I got into miniature painting is because our local store, that was like a RC car store, that one of the managers just really liked Warhammer and they started stocking it, did a small competition. And that is what got me into miniature painting. And then I did a number of those we did from our local stores, and I learned a bunch of things. I ended up judging those after a while, but the thing that I learned is that it's so important to be inclusive and welcoming to the new painters and the people that would be scared to enter, because if you have some people that are really good, even with best of intentions, those people will make others just shrink in, and you don't want to do that. So have categories. Invite people that are new, invite kids, make sure that families that are there for Pokemon night or whatever, make it really easily accessible. And then it's just about celebrating the people that put the work in to put it in the case. And that's really all that I've learned. That's the most important part.
I think it's really important to like create an environment where people that you want to be in your store, like that attracts that, right? So like if you have a nice area set up where they can paint, where you have like lights, maybe an available like set of paints, maybe even like palettes and like paper towel, like that will have, you know, if you build it, they will come kind of mentality. But also if you look like more ideas for that, like what if you had like someone come from out of town to like teach a 2-day workshop on a weekend, and then you would like advertise that to like your customers and also in the local area. Then people will, like, who are into display painting would like get roped into your store and be like, oh, you have a competition. So like kind of creating those opportunities that encourage those people to show up at your store also will kind of hook them in.
I like how your answer was totally your personality of very technical, very engineer minded. And mine was like, be a good person. So
vibes.
I mean, it's just a social observation.
Yeah. Yeah. Not wrong.
Good question.
Yeah.
Leave this here.
Yeah. I think Vince Prime can watch over it. Yeah.
Vince Prime.
And thank you so much for the gift.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Hey, stranger.
Trevor. Mm-hmm. Doing your hobby, I know you may have touched on this a little bit earlier on, but doing your hobby as a job. I get to do my hobby for a job for the government, but I get to do that. But I also find that at the end of a 9-to-5, I don't necessarily have the drive to sit down and push past that. Now, I mean, sometimes I do, and that's a majority, but there are some hard times when it's like, I just don't have the oomph. What do you guys do? Do you ever experience that dip? And what do you guys do to kind of kick yourself out of that rut?
Yeah.
That's a good one. I want to go first?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was like discovering that I really hated painting miniatures at a certain point in my career. And I was like, why this is wrong? Like, why is this happening? And this was like maybe like 2 years ago or something like that. And then, you know, I kind of felt like everything I painted like was kind of meaningless because they were all like sponsored minis. Someone's like, I'm running a Kickstarter campaign, I'm gonna sell one of the models in this range, do you want to paint one? It's like, oh sure, like that's totally harmless, right? But if that's all you do, like kind of maybe like only commission painting, then it kind of just feels like, man, you're not really like
You're painting nothing for yourself, nothing for a competition, nothing for a game. And so I had a new policy at that point where I was like, I'm going to only take those opportunities when I like genuinely want to paint the model. That's like twice a year or four times a year, something like that. But otherwise, all of my videos are like a direct reflection of like what I'm currently like interested in. So it's just kind of like a, you know, a little window into what I'm into. Like, you know, I'm into Shatterpoint. I'll paint some Inquisitors. I'm into Necromunda. That's my next video coming out in a couple of days. So like, it's kind of just, that's how I keep it fun. And it doesn't feel like a job at that point. Cause I love filming. I love, painting stuff for games. So I kind of just chase that.
For me, I like to make sure that the things that I'm doing that are not on video are the things that I need to learn more about so I can be a better communicator about them or actually figure out something that I'm hoping that I can impart. But I don't know that much, so I better kind of keep at it. But then I make sure that no matter what that is that I'm working on is like there's a reason why I have the giant, you know, pile of shame that I do and that probably most of us do is that use that as your muse of which one did you buy over the last decade that speaks to you in that day. And don't overthink it. Don't plan it out. Just get it built, get it primed and start working on it. The like truth question is after working in a corporate world for 15 years, I can be okay not painting in my free time because I'm so fucking lucky because I get to paint at work. And so I will be like, I'm going to be easy on myself. My daughter and I play Switch every night for a week straight. And it's like, I still get to paint. And I feel very fortunate that I can do that. So that usually gives me the excitement to keep going because I'm so lucky. So
thanks, guys. By the way, you, Scott, John, and Vince are kind of like my collective Bob Ross, including all that freaky offstage stuff that goes on.
All right.
But thank you, guys.
The
thanks
deep lore.
Deep lore.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Some call me Tim. Good litmus test.
Yeah.
But
no more, no less.
So, first question, Scott.
Yes.
I actually recently saw Havoc live.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Cool.
Would you like two band recommendations that were also there?
Please.
Hammerhead and I Am.
Okay.
Both really good, good stage presence, great music.
Okay, cool.
Now, real question. Hypothetically, there is a gun to your head.
Jesus. There's so much weaponry going on today. What's wrong with you people?
You can choose any GW mini to paint. What is the one you will refuse at all costs?
Ooh.
Does it have to be a current range?
No.
I feel like I'm contractually obligated to say Space Marines or some kind of Space Marine. But like, what is really like the worst thing you could imagine painting?
I don't know.
You know, okay. Okay, I don't know if this is the answer, but they recently put out a really cool-looking Daughter of Cain model that it's just all hair, feathers, and, like, bone. Or in straps. That's all it is those three things. And, like, maybe, like, 2% skin. And, like, that would be... It looks so cool, but, man, that would suck to paint so much. So maybe that model, yeah.
Mm. Warlord Titan, because it's the biggest.
Oh, that's a better answer. That is a better answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least it's not another channel doing another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. You know how blue Jolly Ranchers taste like blue?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
What paint color is the best flavor?
Paint color?
Tank flavor. Brown from Vallejo Speed Paint, or the Army Painter, the Airbrush Paint Range. What's that called? Vallejo Air? Model Air? Yeah. Tank Brown, that one.
Yeah, Vallejo Model Air is the best flavored brand.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with Blue Raz. I don't think it's a real color. I would say Yellow Ochre is, like, there's like a little bit of extra tang in that one. Honey, I think it's the Honey Mustard.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah. You want to know the worst?
Dude.
Anything that's oil paint is the worst. Especially cadmium.
Yikes.
All right, you have to choose one. Diet sodas now taste like river water or Flamin' Hot now taste like sand?
Flamin' Hot.
Flamin' Hot what? Cheetos?
Tastes like sand.
All of Flamin' Hot? Yeah.
Flamin' Hot in general.
Diet sodas or Flamin' Hot the flavor? Come on.
Yeah. If I didn't have diet sodas, I'd probably die. So no Flamin' Hot for me.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
My question is also very serious. If you had to commission a sculpt, a 75 millimeter display model of Vinci V, who would you get to do it? And what would the specifications be? Like what pose, what accessories, all that fun stuff.
I would get Victor Aguilar del Bosque, and I would have him standing in the Conan sword raised pose. Yeah. Naked, of course. Naked. Yeah. Yeah.
Just the apron.
Just the apron. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because Vince is such a fan of the Muppets, I'd actually have Jim Henson make a Muppet of Vince.
Oh. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And it would just be an apron and just like. Just no bits. And I think that's enough. Yeah. And that's enough.
That's enough to go on.
Yeah. Jim Henson Muppet. Final answer.
John, I want to let you know that I appreciate you giving Poots about a 3-week heads up that they still don't have the Colonium Butcher instructions up on their website.
Okay.
But my question is, do you think every painter should go through the exercise, and this is for both of you, of painting an army? And an army being several different models or different types of models that share themes or colors.
Should every painter do that? I don't think every painter, there's not a single thing that every painter should do.
100% agree with that.
Yeah. If that is not for you, you're going to burn yourself out and you're not going to like painting anymore. And that's the whole point. Cause this is a hobby. We do this for fun. Like we need to keep it fun. So I wouldn't recommend it. If that turns you off to painting, don't do it. But if it scares you, that's different. If you'd like to, but you're scared, then I'd say just give it a try.
Yeah. I feel like into it, it's like exploring all like of what the hobby has to offer. Definitely I'd recommend it because like it definitely is a different beast. But I think at all times you should just be doing whatever you're having the most fun doing. I'm trying to think of like a reason why you wouldn't be doing that and you'd be treating the hobby kind of like going to school or something like that. But I can't come up with anything. So yeah, I feel like you should just be doing what's fun.
Yeah, I think for me, the value of it is really taking something from, you know, a vehicle and transposing it into a character or something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of across different unit types and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. For sure. Yeah, cool. That's often fun, for sure. Yeah.
Hi. As somebody who was very recently indoctrinated into the hobby.
How recent?
I mean, he's been working on me for 2 years,
okay.
But I did just recently just absolutely go off the entire deep end, and I'm kind of overwhelmed and kind of drowning in the hobby. Mm-hmm. So what is some advice that you would give a new hobbyist or a new painter, and maybe some things that you would have them avoid?
Yeah, I'd put blinders on, honestly. Like, just like pick a thing and then do that thing. And like, I wouldn't like be concerned with like, am I doing it the right way? Am I using the right tools? And then once you're kind of like satisfied with that thing, then kind of like move on. So maybe it's like, okay, I'm going to paint some like lizard man. I'm going to try out like more of an alien kind of, not alien, like more of like an animal kind of hide, kind of pattern thing. And I'm going to move on to more of like a humanoid thing, you know? I think when you like look at the ocean of possibilities, it's like, holy shit, you know? So if you just kind of like put blinders on and pick what's fun and kind of, you know, slowly expand your gaze, that might be able to help.
So how do I do that if I have ADHD?
You're doomed. I don't know.
It's okay to
take
start.
Adderall.
Yeah, that's what you should do.
Ritalin. Yeah, anyway, yeah.
Pharmacist Scott here giving out free advice.
It's important to say this time that this is not medical advice.
This is counterproductive to what Scott and I do for a living, but don't watch all the videos. I mean, yeah, you watch all of ours, but nobody else's.
Too late for that.
Yeah. It's too easy to fall into the trap to feel like watching hobby videos is doing hobby. The exception is if you have hobby videos on while you're hobbying, if that keeps you calm or keeps you interested or you can pay attention and it's like, oh, I didn't clip a sprue for the last 5 minutes, I should probably do it. So if you if you are have your attention wandering, having something else there, but if your hands are busy, you'll just keep moving. It'll be okay. But if you get overwhelmed with all the stuff that's out there, it's like you won't even know where to start. So just keep it small and, you know, keep something going. So if you get distracted, you'll find your way back.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hey, hey Rufus.
I was wondering what your favorite immaterial thing you've ever brought back home with you from Adepticon. So like new painting technique, special gaming moment, or like a conversation with a friend that you only see at Adepticon.
Mm. Like, wow. Are you fishing for yourself being mentioned in this, Rufus? Yeah.
I may have helped kill Conjon.
Yeah. I mean, you pulled the trigger, Rufus. No, I did. I say my very first Adepticon, this moment will stay with me as long as I'm alive. I got to meet my hobby hero, Ben Comets, in person. And after like just years and hours and hours and hours of painting Buddha and like trying everything that he did to realize that it's like, oh my gosh, he's like a real person. Like I can picture it clear as day, that moment. So that one will always stay with me.
Yeah. I think for me, it was like I took a speed painting class by Rafael Apico, like one of the members of Massive Voodoo at the time. And it wasn't, we didn't even paint models in it. It was just a demonstration. He painted a step and then handed it around. And he painted a model in an hour, which for me at that time was like, I didn't think people did that. Like, I have a very narrow worldview. Like, I think everyone experiences the hobby just like me. And that's how it works. And so to see someone like take that model, it was like a CMON board game mini, and like make it look super solid in an hour, even including like handing it around and letting us look at it, was like, that opened like a whole new world for me. And then I started experimenting with board game minis, and then I got into other things. So that was like a really cool eye opener for me that I remember a lot.
Anybody else have the Aladdin song in their head going right now? No, just me? No,
just you.
It's still going. Decent question, Rufus.
Hi, guys. I'm Josh. This is kind of three in one, but maybe some parts are easier than others.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Part one is, who's the better painter? Part two is, who's the better gamer? And part three is, who's the better YouTuber or content creator?
Jesus Christ! So I like how it goes from hypothetically you're fighting, hypothetically you're going to die, let's see if we can actually make it happen. Live.
I think if like we had to like quantify it in some way, maybe if we played any number of games, maybe
it's like Olympia of gaming.
Yeah, so maybe at the moment I'm a better gamer, he's a better painter.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's just pause for a second.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I think John, honestly, like, it's been amazing to see like John's channel like really explode in the way it is. And honestly, I learned so much from John, like in his acumen for YouTube. Like I really struggle to like stick to a schedule and like plan things out. And like the instant that John got into YouTube, he hit the ground like running, like so, and he was so well just like structured and disciplined. And like, you know, he's the reason the podcast comes out on time most times. So like I really appreciate John and his channel for that. And he's definitely like inspired me to like try to like kind of get back on that horse in a big way. So I think John's a better YouTuber.
I don't think so. But I think we're probably even for gaming. I think like
Fuck out of here, dude. Get the fuck out.
I wouldn't be sitting here. I wouldn't have a channel if it wasn't for Scott. So that's always gonna, I will always look up to him. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
All right. So bad at public speaking is gonna be fast and dirty. If there's a mini painting calendar like there is for firemen, What is your pose? And what month are you?
January, Vince. February, Vince. Do you know what March is? Vince. Hell yeah. Vince.
You didn't say pose, though.
I don't know.
The bat wing. If you know, you know. Good question. And speaking of Vince, we're going to pull up a third chair here. For the first time in the history of Tup Live, we are going to have Vince on as a special guest. Now, he's been a special guest on Tup before, but never on Tup Live because he's a loser that teaches painting all the time in the evenings, but not this year. So if you have any questions that you want to include Vince on or something specifically for Vince that his PG-ass channel wouldn't allow... Now's your time.
It's also not the third chair. It's the sixth chair because we're all sitting on two chairs each because we need boosters because we're children.
Keep you boys apart.
Now there's a bunch of questions.
What the fuck is this?
Yeah. I was just waiting because I'm lazy. I didn't want to stand here.
And I could tell
that's
you
a
were
good
on,
move.
I just want to say I could tell you were on two chairs because John's feet weren't touching the ground this whole time while I was sitting.
That's so cute.
They're like this under there. I don't know if everybody can see, but they're just swinging around.
So I'm 5'11".
Sure.
5'11", 6 feet tall.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, this is my first time at Adepticon, and I feel like I've missed a step or a story here. So this question is for Vince and Scott specifically. Who the hell is Con John, and what is that about?
Right, go ahead.
The first rule of Con John is you don't talk about Con John, okay? We don't want to invoke this guy.
Yeah, agreed. Con John is a dark aspect. It's the it's Mr. Hyde. That's the easiest way to say it.
Yeah. No comment. Just don't feed me after midnight.
Hey y'all, big fan LP here. Question: YouTube and edutainment. I think all of y'all, I've really enjoyed your content of the education of it. So like Scott from the early days of like the graphics of the color wheel, and Vince, I've used your videos for reference of like painting marble, and John just like the craft world style and just so many styles and just always trying to be the best. What do you see as the challenges of YouTube versus of entertainment versus education and trying to stay on top of that algorithm, but also teach people?
Ooh, that's a heavy question.
No, I'll start if you guys want to.
Yeah.
It's easy. Okay. Sure. Here we go. I don't think about it because my channel is boring and I am a boring person. I don't know if you've actually watched my channel, but I am not an interesting person. So, like, I am best described as an average quality lecturer at the local community college. I am here to deliver information so that hopefully you can use it, and that's my goal. As far as, like, attaching any amount of the word tainment onto anything I'm doing is generous in the extreme. There is info. I will agree with that. That is where that word stops. Making infotainment. I mean, the serious answer is making infotainment like these two guys do, where they're both communicating really, really powerful and transformative information about miniature painting while also like being funny and entertaining and doing skits and stuff. Every so often I'll have little jokes or things like that in my videos, but I'll be honest, I just don't have the time nor the inclination, nor am I that clever. And it also takes like a lot longer for everything because John has to film that stuff. That means like every single shot you see John lock off, right? That's him locking down a shot, setting up a camera, setting up lighting, testing sound, running a test shot, taking it. And then that's a new shot. And that's another artifact on his timeline that he's then got to edit together, right? And I'm like, ain't nobody got time for that. I got like three jobs and three dogs and I don't have any kids and that's good. But like, you know, it's way easier when you can just lock a camera down and then talk, and then I just film everything and cut it in. There you go. That's my answer.
Yeah, I think that's good. I don't have anything more valuable to say. The only thing that I say about infotainment is, like, as a dad, I have an 11-year-old daughter. I see it, this is not coming trying to come across as preachy, but so much of social media, especially from the perspective of a parent, is just on the kind of hollow entertainment side. But I feel like if I could trick you a little bit to think that it's going to be funny, and then you actually learn something, that I've done a little bit of good to keep you at the painting desk. So it's just the basic goal that I go with. So,
they definitely compete with one another. Obviously, like, you're trying to think about people's attention spans. You're trying to think about, like, okay, like, how down into the details do I get about this very specific thing that I'm doing? Are people going to be interested? How many people? Like 5%. So, yeah, they definitely like butt heads. But I think it's a really fun challenge to, like, sit down and write a script and try to figure out, okay, like, where can I fit this in? Like, what visuals do I show? Am I, like, maintaining the energy here and things like that? And, like, it's difficult to do that for, like, an entire 20-minute video, but, like, for the first, like, you know, 2 minutes, it's, like, possible. And that's, you know, it's kind of like a fun challenge. But, yeah, it's definitely frustrating sometimes. So I think it's important to do, like, a little bit of both, right? You have ones that are high energy, that are about growth and finding new people, and you have ones for the fans that are, like, really crunchy, and, like, you get in front of a whiteboard and, like, you know, and, you know, scratch stuff down. Yeah.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw you.
Yeah. And we will have the is it four in line still? We'll be our final four questions.
Make them good.
Make them real good.
All right, Vince, it just blows my mind to hear you kind of, like, dunk on yourself. Like, good for you. But, like, when I think about, like, paragons of the hobby, I'm like, dude, Vincent Ventrella, dude, he's got a million videos. He's, like, super prolific. If he's got a topic about miniature painting, he's got it, man. Like, mm-hmm. Like, solid, dude. Truly a paragon. So the question I have for you, I feel like, not trying to toot my own horn here, but I feel like I'm at a junction right now where I'm, like, consistently placing in the top five of, like, best army paints when I go to GTs and stuff like that.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, I'm doing all right. But then I come to, like, Golden Demon and I watch these YouTubers and you guys are knocking out, like, these incredible display paints. I'm like, you guys are on another level.
Sure.
And it seems from my point of view that it's almost like a different approach to the art form. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear your take on it. If you agree with that statement. And then also, if you do agree with that, well, do you think that there's an intersection, right? At what point were you just painting your little ponies for Bretonnia? And next it popped up, okay, we're going to give a serious attempt at Golden Demon, and I got my first finalist, man. Like, when was that intersection, and how did you approach that? And do you think, I guess, you should specifically try to approach painting display to develop yourself?
Yeah, I guess. Okay, sure.
Sorry,
first off, thank you for the compliment. That's very nice of you to say. I've said before, my goal is to have, like, the Library of Alexandria for miniature painting on my channel, and that's just, I really just want it to be it's something that if anybody has a particular question, they can search for it. Secondly, I won a Golden Demon at the first Golden Demon I competed in, so I just want to
make wow, okay.
Lay that down.
Okay. I didn't know they had, like Golden Demon Birmingham, where there was, like, 14 people there, Vince.
Thank you. It was the one in the UK.
Oh.
Okay.
Brexit.
No, but seriously, like, joke aside. The best army you can ever paint is a display quality army. So what I mean by that is you can treat everything in your army. Like, I have probably three display quality armies. That means I was specifically painting it to be the best painted army of that type, Age of Sigmar army in this case, in the country. Okay. And, like, since I judge many of them at most of the big events, I know what they are. I know who's painting them, a couple of people in this room who actually have some of the best ones around. And so, like, I knew what I was aiming at. But I can still only spend, like, 12 to 20 hours per fig before, like, that. I mean, you're just going to break otherwise, and that's really hard. Competition painting is something bigger than that, right? And the reason it's bigger than that is because when you're painting for competition, you get to express something on an individual level that you don't get to express with your army. Your army has to work coherently, consistently across a large number of figs and in generally kind of like crappy ballroom lighting like we're in now. Yeah. Whereas with a figure, you can tell a story with lighting. You can tell a story with a narrative. You can do something unusual. You can put figs in weird positions. You can have oversized, undersized bases. You can have things knocked around, put or, you know, placed in different situations and so on and so forth. So there's a ton more freedom, but that freedom brings a ton more responsibility. And so you have to be able to then like elevate your entire game to that level. There's no competition army. The way you get from one to the other is simply by working all of the same techniques and then figuring out where you're going to just keep pushing. It's an endurance match. There's a certain amount of technical knowledge you have to gain, but then after that, it's an endurance match. It's John painting 10-hour days for 10 days straight. That's an endurance match. You have to like work up to that. In the same way, you clearly work out. You seem very fit.
Awkward.
No, not at all. The guy looks great. Okay, he's not on camera. I want everybody to know. Yeah. Okay. Like people should be respecting. Put the respect on this man's name. He's putting the hours in. Okay. So, at any rate, like that takes an amount of just absolute endurance. You have to build up that muscle just like anything else. So yeah, it's the combination of being of the technical knowledge to meet it and then being able to put the time in to actually do it. That's it.
Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
So Vince, you get a real question since you're a real grown up person.
I hate that. You can sit out.
So
I'm a grown up.
Yeah, that's why you had to defend it. But in all seriousness, to kind of echo what the previous gentleman said, well, I respect very much how humble you are about everything you do, and you kind of have a very calm, relaxed style. I think it's apparent to everyone here who has massive respect for all three of you, but Vince, you've been doing this since the way back mid times.
Sure.
You have 10,000 videos. According to John, you have 500 painted armies in your basement that all look amazing.
Can confirm.
We have seen your work at Golden Demon. Like, you've got lightning in a bottle. The question is, when did that strike? Like, what was it for you that set this whole thing?
Oh my God, what a question.
Oh my God.
The year was 1997. It was a dark and rainy day.
Oh, wow.
I was born that year.
A friend of mine walked into my college house. It was a house that at any given point in time, there could be 15 people in, not because there was a party, but because everybody just happened to have one person over. It was a very big house with lots of folks. And he walked in and he said, Vince, I want to tell you about this game called Warhammer. It's great. You should play it. It's really fun. I'm going to teach you how to play it. I said, well, how do we do it? He said, well, here's these Empire Knights. I stole them from the game Battlemasters. They're yellow and unpainted and garbage, but you're going to set them up in this line. And then I'm going to set up my Chaos Knights over here. And I said, okay, what do I do? He said, well, you try to charge me. I tried to charge him, and I failed. And then my knights trundled forward. And he said, okay, well, now you lose. Yes. And he charged me with the Chaos Knights, and he killed my entire army. And I was like, this was really fun.
This is really fun.
Oh, it all makes so much sense.
I'm going to make this my life's work. No, I mean, it's... That is like the true origin story of how I learned Warhammer, by the way. But the real answer is, I don't know. I am a very obsessive person. I like being able... I've always liked art and artistic expression and stuff like that, but I've never really had a great outlet for it. This was something, and it just adheres to my personality. Like, John's comment of me being a technomancer is not a joke. Like, I really... That is how I approach things very much. And so... I think it was just an obsessive nature, basically. I am a workaholic, and I don't sleep much, and I don't have a lot going on in my life, everybody, so, you know, it's pretty easy. Like, I'm not trying to be pathetic, I'm just saying, like, I keep it light.
Yeah. You
know? Like, I'm not running for office or anything, but it's fine. You know, I don't have a lot going on, so, like, let's paint, let's do this. Why idle hands make the devil's work, right? So let's just get to work, and, I like painting, and it's a fun thing to do, and so I just kept doing it and then realized basically YouTube was a thing, and that I really did see, like, this is what I want to do. That's it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good question.
So kind of echoing that guy's sentiments a bit, I have a canned response for this. I get this from like friends who are not in the hobby world or colleagues that I work with. But why do you play war games and not just video games?
Scott, go ahead. I want you to start this, actually, because you play video games.
Yeah.
You know, I actually haven't played a video game in like maybe like 6 or 8 months. And I think when I'm thinking about my most recent like gaming experiences, which is like Shatterpoint and Necromunda and stuff like that, there's just like a level of investment that makes the whole experience just so much more enjoyable. And also there's like a level of humanity. It's also really enjoyable as well. I get to play with all my friends. I get to experience that social nature. And you can do that with video games a lot as well. But I think it's more in person with wargaming just in general. So that's really nice. But there's so much more to it than just the game, right? It's like the creative aspect. It's putting together a warband that you really love and making it special, making it your own, and finding your friends that also share that same enthusiasm and like hyping each other up and like getting excited about the backstory of your stuff. It's like there's just so much to really get into about it. But I feel like the same can be said about video games, you know? So I'm trying to like really come up with a differentiating factor.
And we all got to play video games instead now. Oh no.
You know, it could be. You could say that, right? Maybe. I don't have a great answer though.
Okay.
I got to pee, you take me.
Okay, you now we got two questions left. You can't hold it. I'm like a child. All right. Here's my answer. So I have 7 level 95 characters in LOTRO or level 100 or something like that. I had multiple, let's just keep climbing backwards, right? Okay, so in War, I had, anybody play Warhammer Age of Reckoning? Yeah? No? Okay. Well, I'm old. There used to be these things called MMOs, and it was how you played together with your friends. We would meet up at the soda shop and talk about it and play jacks. Jesus. Anyways, I was a big MMO enthusiast and played lots of those games. Like, I could go down the list of, like, War and SWTOR and Star Wars Galaxies and UO and EverQuest and World of Warcraft and City of Heroes and. And here's the thing about that. I was obviously obsessive about those as well. And in the end, where are all those characters that I invested hundreds and thousands of hours of my life into? I don't know. Most of those games are dead. Most of those servers are down. Those that are still up, you know, my account isn't there anymore. And I don't care because ultimately it wasn't anything. I had fun, and I had fun with a particular group of friends at that time. Some of those friends I still see. Some of those friends I don't. And I valued those social experiences, but that was all they were. They were cotton candy. And they blow away like, leaves in the wind. Whereas with the hobby, I've formed deep bonds to, you know, many friends like Scott and John and others here who are in this audience and others who are out there listening. And those are real friendships. Like, I say this without any kind of hyperbole or joke that I love Scott and I love John. Like, I really do mean that. And I would not know these guys if it wasn't for this hobby. That's real. That's something that no matter what cannot be actually replaced. And so this hobby gives me friends. It gives me crafts. It gives me an outlet. Those things are on my shelf. And even if I sold them, I'd still have the pictures of them, of the creations and the art that I made and the community that I've gotten to share that experience with. And I can't picture, the video game can never in my mind be more than 20 or 30% of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
awesome.
It.
Thank you. Beat it up.
Since someone brought up alter egos, can we ever get a podcast episode with Daryl and upside down glasses Scott?
I mean, we should probably unlock a new Patreon tier.
You want an hour and a half of that?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I can't commit to that. Maybe like a 10-minute portion.
I can. But I don't speak for Daryl. He's not here this year, so.
What up, Sexy Teeth Jossie?
Yeah. Everyone give Sexy Teeth Jossie a round of applause. Yeah. And before you speak, Josh, Drew, stand up. Everyone say hi to Ginger Jesus. This is Drew's first Adepticon. He's also part of our hometown D&D crew, and he's been a big help. So thank you, Drew.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, what's your question?
All right. It's I've heard a lot of rumors from John
right? And I want to know what really happens at VinciCon, and when are you opening up tickets to the public?
Sure. Never. Last question first. Never. No, I mean, look, VinciCon's great. It is great to have these guys over. Somebody was missing from the last one. But that's all right. We'll get him around again. I'm already beating him up over it. He knows. He knows. That's why we put him on the board. I mean, what happens is exactly what you think happens.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
No. It's exactly what you think. Whatever the darkest, most carnal thoughts in your minds are, it's twice that.
I still remember the first time we were like sleeping in that in like one of your guest bedrooms. John was like, "Do you want to watch Love Island?" And I was like, "What the fuck?" Like, and then I was like, "Of course." It was like 3 a.m. We were like just watching like episode 2 of some random ass season. Yeah, that was wild.
It is notable that usually Scott and John do have to share a bed when they stay at my place. That is true. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I mean, you know, we paint, we hang out, we watch videos, we play Magic, we talk a lot, we watch a lot of other people's content. We punish ourselves. One of a fun secret ritual that I'll let you in on is we all punish ourselves by forcing the lot of us to watch our own videos.
Rough.
So we all have to watch our most recent videos anytime we're together, and there's no more worse torture in this universe than having to watch your own content. Yeah. So, you know, just fun stuff like that.
If we had them on the big screen right now, that is the worst possible thing. You would all watch it.
Right.
Well, we're here.
Yes. Correct. Yeah, that's what happens. There you go.
All right. Well, that's the end of the show, guys. Thank you for all your questions. They were super awesome. They're awesome every single year. We really appreciate them. It's cool to see, like I said in the beginning, a lot of faces that I recognized from the first year and second year. So thanks for coming back. It's really cool. It's super special.
Yeah. And if you do want to hang around, get a picture, ask us another quick question or two that you don't want everyone to judge you for, we'll be hanging around for a while yet, too. So with that, we're going to have another episode, not live, pretty soon. And until then, we will catch you on the flippity flop. There it is. Woo! All right.